Horts presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three. On this Tuesday, and hour three on Tuesday most often brings Andy Serling of the New York Racing Association back at beautiful Belmont Park. Racing resumed, and so has America's Day at the Races, bringing you terrific action from all kinds of places on the compass. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
All right. How was opening week at the Big B?
Cold.
Yeah, eh?
Yeah. Cold.
It's always tough there.
Not always tough there.
Well,
it's not tough there in the middle of September, but it was windy. But it was nice to be back, you know? And it was good to be back at Belmont. Always a nice place to be. Racing was good, tough, interesting. Saw some good mains. You know, the usual. It's always an adjustment coming back from Saratoga.
Well, and you know, the break, you know, people seem to get, unnerved by, if they have to wait like 10 days between meets. But it always seems to benefit everybody.
Well, I'm not sure I can say it always seems to, considering it's the first time we've done it.
Well, I don't mean just in New York. There's other jurisdictions around the country that have spreads between, you know, have the opportunity to take time between meets, and it, yeah. You know, it benefits everybody. Field size and everybody gets a freshening.
Yeah. It seems like, to be honest with you, it probably seems a little. I don't know exactly what word to use, but I'm not sure why we've never done it before, to be honest. It's a lot of things that sort of like racing on Thanksgiving. Why is it something we continue to do, despite the fact that people don't really play that much and the handles aren't that good, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you adapt, right?
Ideally.
You know, I don't know what else to say, you know, it's You adapt and you change things, and hopefully the things you change for the better, right?
And when it came to, you know, the start of things, one of the races that, you know, everybody was looking forward to, I think just to see what she was that Belmont Oaks with Magic Attitude. We talked to Arno Delacour yesterday. That was an exciting North American debut.
Well, I mean, she's a horse that had run races in Europe that were so significantly better than the sort of mediocre crew that she was meeting in there that all she had to do was show up and she was obviously going to win, right?
I think.
I mean, it's not really, you know, I think she's a very nice horse. What level she would be if she were running, you know, against a more competitive group, I don't really know. I mean, it's not a particularly impressive bunch of three-year-old fillies in this country on the turf. I think that's pretty clear. They're not bad, but they're not particularly good. And probably also the ones who are a little bit better are also a little bit distance challenged, right? Antoinette, the horse who ran second, is sort of a legitimate grade one type horse. Well, that's a little ridiculous. And, you know, Belmont sort of taking advantage of circumstance, and they've done the right thing where they're using her modicum of speed to her advantage and in races that no longer ever feature any paces whatsoever. So, you know, they're to be credited, both Bill and John Velasquez, for sort of maximizing her potential. But I don't think in the history of racing she's going to be confused with anything remotely close to a grade one type. And as racing gets tougher, I mean, it's just, you know, where is she going to be? I don't know. So Magic Attitude is a nice horse, but she was meeting a field that was just at her mercy. She comes out of as good a French Oaks as they've probably run in years. So she finished three lengths behind. You know, if you go through the race, even the sixth place finisher came back, and she finished fifth. Magic Attitude came back and won a group race. I want to say at Goodwood, maybe it was Deauville. Regardless, she just had that field at her mercy, and she ran. And Javier rode her like he never really felt there was any chance she was going to lose. He didn't have any sense of urgency. And as soon as he wheeled her out, she just flew by. You know, how good is she? I don't know. She's better than... is she going to come back in a mile and eighth in 3 weeks and be as effective against probably a slightly tougher field at Keeneland? I don't know. You know, it's a reasonably good question. But she was certainly on that field over a barrel. We all she needed to do is show up, and she did.
It was interesting listening to Arno Delacour yesterday about, you know, because I asked him about, you know, the instructions, and you know, he said he you know, received the insights upon arrival, and she's a sharper, she can be sharper. I referenced you actually talking about how the Europeans don't have the best, typically don't have the greatest gait habits, and that they can sometimes, you know, put themselves early on in their North American careers, that they, you know, sometimes will walk out of the gate and they're at a slight disadvantage. And he addressed that. It was just interesting listening to him, you know, talk about, you know, how he was viewing her, and you know, there's certain challenges when you do this that are different than, you know, starting a young horse out from, you know,
I don't want to speak for Arno Delacour, but I imagine he probably felt like, I just don't want to screw this one up, you know?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
I'm sure that he knew with almost certainty that he was running the best horse in the race. And, you know, it's one thing when you have a horse that you've been training its whole career, and so you can be credited with doing a good job with it, and therefore if the horse doesn't perform as well as it's capable of a one day, well, I mean, you're sort of allowed. But when Delacour's shoes, it's obviously good to get a horse like that, but I think the pressure is, well, the last trainer did so well with her, I don't want to screw it up. And you know, Leal had bought that horse after her victory, I think, three races back. And it wasn't as though she was one of these Euros that came over here because they got a call that the race was coming up weak. She had been over here for over a month, and actually been planning to run at Del Mar the Oaks, and I guess he said he had a small problem with her that caused her to miss it. Maybe it was a cough or something. And it all worked out for the best because she won this race instead, and without having to ship across the country. So she was a horse that had been trained to run over here. So she was ready, and she didn't get left. She did what she was supposed to do. I don't mean to make light of her performance, but she's a better horse than those horses. And better, when you're running against horses that are inferior to you, you're supposed to win. And she did. It was a five-horse field. All she had to do was overcome a relatively soft pace. And to be honest, considering how soft some of these paces are, it wasn't even that slow. So the best horse won. Never a bad thing.
No, exactly. Exactly. Well, I'm looking forward to the, you know, her development.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see. If, you know, I have no idea, you know, what kind of Euros are going to show up for the Breeders' Cup this year. And I imagine a lot of it has to do with what restrictions there are, because in reality, right, it's hard to imagine how much you're going to be able to ship your people. And I'll give you an example of a situation that was bad. And it's just because of circumstance. You look at the Woodbine Mile, and I'm not going to say the ballot proposition is really good enough necessarily to beat those horses, but the rider putting the horse on the front end gave him zero chance. I mean, that's already been shown with that horse, that he can't be in that position. And listen, he's a difficult horse. I don't want to be too hard on the rider. Broke from the outside post. He can be tricky. He can be a bit of a runoff. But once he was placed where he was, he had no chance. And I think a lot of the Europeans, what if the jockeys can't come over? Or, you know, what are the travel restrictions? Are these guys ready to fly over here 2 weeks early and quarantine? I mean, I don't know all the rules in place in different states, but in this country, I believe if you come from one of these countries, you're going to have to quarantine, right? So yeah. are the European interests going to be less inclined to want to ship if they can't bring their people, have their riders, and run those races? So I think we're probably looking at a Breeders' Cup that has a relative dearth of foreign participation. I mean, it's the circumstances. It's this year. It's just the way things are. But, geez, the horses that she ran against in the French Oaks, I think any of the horses that finished 1, 2, 3 in there, they'd be major players in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. But I just don't know how confident we can be that any of them are going to show up.
It's a fair question, and we haven't really – it's been very quiet other than announcing
Has anybody talked to Aidan O'Brien about it? I mean, what is the thing? I mean, he's a guy who's ready to ship over a whole load of horses, right?
Sure.
I mean, his participation in the Breeders' Cup. So has anybody talked to him? I mean, I'm not – maybe somebody has, but has there been an article? Has there been an interview? Like, what are they thinking? Where are they?
Have not heard word one.
Are they going to – you know, and if Europeans aren't going to be running in those races, why run like the English? I mean, some of those champions days, right? They run right on top of each other. You run English champions 2 weeks after Longchamp, right? A week or two. Maybe they should run them a week later. They're not going to run here. What's the impetus to run them so quickly? And since you're not really running with fans, to run them anytime you want, right?
Yeah.
You can make a change from 1 week to the next with relative ease. Not like people are making plans to go to the races. Maybe it's better and beneficial. I'm just throwing it out there. It's just, you know, because I think one of the reasons they run them so quickly is they do want the European interest, you know, that may want to go to the Breeders' Cup to at least not feel like they're right on top of the race. Or maybe they don't really care. I don't know.
Now, it's getting to be that, you know, especially with this weekend coming up and with the various challenge races that are going to crop up. And in fact,
The Ark's in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Less than 2 weeks. The Ark's in 12 days, I think, right? What's today's date, the 22nd?
Today's the 22nd, yes.
Yeah, the Ark would be the 4th, right? Yeah, we're there. So I'm just curious, and it doesn't seem like anybody's talking. And it's not the Breeders' Cup's fault. It's not any of our faults let's be honest. One of the reasons that a race like the Oaks came up weaker, no Europeans could come over. Wasn't just timing, it was also they couldn't come over.
Right.
They could, but it's tricky, you know. And I understand, why would people want to ship if they can't have any of their people there?
Yeah, and it's not like the situation we're seeing domestically and in North America, where people have relationships. There's somebody they know at the racetrack where they're sending their horse in. Yesterday,
they know some people, you know. But let's give you an example. What if Enable wanted to make her last? I don't know if she's retired this year or not. She seems to just keep running and running and running. Are they going to run the Breeders' Cup if nobody, the connections and the stable, they can't make it over? Maybe, but I don't think so, right? It just seems interesting to me that this is not a topic that's gotten much discussion.
No, it hasn't. Really, you're right. And you're absolutely right.
I mean, that's one of the things we love about the Breeders' Cup, right? Trying to analyze the Europeans. Think of some of the scores we made with Europeans, the Talismanics, you know, the Caracontes over the years. Horses that were interesting horses head of the race. It'll take a lot. And let me tell you something. The turf. How about the Breeders' Cup turf without any Europeans? I mean, that's quite a group. Those long-distance U.S. turf horses. I'm not to be mean, but that's an ugly bunch. It's also the same crew we've been seeing forever. Probably United, right up in the second last year, could be the favorite there. Right? And I'm not looking to be, in other words, lost the bricks and mortar in a close finish last year, and I'm not trying to be, but, you know, I'm a big channel maker fan as there is, and obviously the soft ground and the smart ride by Manny helped in Saratoga, but come on. better make that Breeders' Cup turf purse $500,000 this year.
You bring up a great point.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's my first part of the week, so I appreciate being there with you.
I wanted to get it up. Early score on the board. A couple of notable performances beside, we always gravitate to stakes in the maiden races, but how about the emergence of Faya, the Frisian Fire?
Yeah. I got to tell you, I'm going to be curious what he does. Rob Masiello, who's, you know, really a good guy and really involved in the game. It's nice to see him, a good horse. $400,000 for a 3-year-old gelding turf sprinter. And that's a lot to pay. So, I mean, he's obviously got a very good horse in his hands, you know. I guess Rob was saying he's not nominated the Breeders' Cup, and I'm not, you know, the economics of paying $100,000 to supplement him for that race are kind of foolish. He's a three-year-old. There's no big hurry at this point. He's a very, very good horse. And I, you know, I said on the show, and I didn't pick him, but I said in the show, and the more I looked, the more I felt like I should have picked him, that he should have been favored over French Reef, and they were clearly favoring French Reef because it was a Chad Brown horse. But his last race in Vincent Say, he's a very, very fast horse. It's the different train to speed out of this horse. Don't ever think it's in his best interest for him not to be fast, because he can outrun every horse he runs against, and that is a very, very good quality for a turf sprinter. You know, don't ever think he's going to be a better horse rating.
No, that's a mistake. That's a mistake that gets pointed out on a regular basis, where it's maddening to players in particular. I mean, you shake your head. I mean, we get too much of that as it is.
Yeah, no, he's a really good horse. That was some race, huh? Yeah. See, the time seems a little hard to believe, right? Because they were fast, but, I mean, Trackus had almost the exact same times. That was clearly a very, very strong effort at the horse. I mean, I don't know, you know, it's a little fast, right? It's too quick to come back to that Belmont Sprint championship. You know, maybe if you point, there's one at Aqueduct, I think, in November. Whatever the case is, he's good. It's nice for Rob. I hope they do well with him. But well, I think the Russian would probably. Go ahead.
Well, Albertrani, I want to get a plug in for Tom Albertrani, who has, you know, now had a nice series of these turf sprinters the last couple
of
years.
Well, I don't know that Tom would sit there and take a big bow for a horse that was bought privately.
Well, I'm saying, but...
Tom does a good job with the turf sprinters. I agree. You know, whatever. Yeah. But I don't know if this is one I would want to point out. This horse they just bought, right?
Yeah. You send him out.
Frisian Fire would be the best sprinter in the turf sprint. He's an exciting horse, but, you know, let's be fair. He's going to have to face some much better horses if he goes forward in big races. And it's one thing to show that kind of speed against lessers, and not that French Reef's a bad horse, but he was off a maiden win. He's not hasn't exactly proven himself in stakes competition, but he's an exciting horse. And horses that are that fast are exciting. He just has to keep breaking well.
What did you make? Speaking of some of the maiden successes too. The mid card on Saturday after the Oaks that I'm trying to think of the races that were involved in the cross country in two winners of 67,000 on the cross country.
We had one of the winners on the show on Sunday.
Oh, nice.
Played through Naira Bets, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It was a $90 or $96 ticket. Man, great job by him. He singled Maxwell Esquire.
Yep.
And used two in the Canadian race, including the winner, obviously, the filly, who should never pay 13 and change. I'm not exactly sure why she was such a big price in there.
No, well, Kevin Attard wasn't either. He thought it was...
He was upset that she wasn't getting enough respect. I never understand that.
So that's I know. It's a
we respect her. I mean, we love her. I've been ranting about her for years now. I'm like her biggest fan. I love her. She's awesome. I love a horse like that. Playing for 16,000 at a turf sprint. It's remarkable. We talked about her constantly on the show in Saratoga.
It's an amazing story.
At the Preakness, when Cloud Computing won, I was walking up the stairs, the saddling area, and Chad Brown was behind me, and he said to me, "How is this horse 13-1? And I said, "They're wrong." It's like, you know, the betting is wrong. We rely on the public occasionally getting it wrong. Occasionally. That's, they don't get right, it wrong that often, but occasionally they do.
Well, that's what we're hoping for. We're looking
right,
for
right.
that.
Fortunately, I don't think that Starship, she's really, you know, Jubilee is really... She's probably okay. She probably didn't go back to her stall after the race and cry because she didn't get any respect from the betting public.
No, she didn't. She put her head in the tub and couldn't have cared less.
Right. They don't read the internet. They're not on Twitter. I'm envious.
What'd you make of Likeable blowing out that maiden win, that maiden mile?
Well, that was a funny race, right? Because Lee's horse ran off the paddock. The horse went well, but I was not a particular fan of that heavy favorite in there who finished third. And there really wasn't much left, you know. The first time starter who I picked, who ran second, didn't break and, you know, made a little bit of a run. Likeable ran well. He got an 81 buyer. We'll see. You know, it's hard to judge in those six circumstances, right? But he ran a very, very credible race, much more professional in his debut. I bet him in his debut. He was against the track, but still a different horse on Saturday for sure.
There was also, after that, there was the turf group. And, you know, speaking of nice prices, $17 on Batya, was the Earl Mack Grand Motion, that was okay. I thought she was certainly one of the ones.
Who are we talking about?
That was the turf mile for the maiden fillies.
What race?
The 7th, right Saturday, right after the...
horse. What was the horse's name?
Batya.
Oh, yeah, no, that horse was...
She was one of the ones, right?
Yeah, I picked him third, I think. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where I picked him is really relevant. Horse had some pedigree. Horse had a nice pedigree, I think.
Absolutely.
Fun race. Because the race really sort of came apart in the late stages, right? Was that the sixth race or seventh race?
Seventh. This was part of the cross country.
Oh, Bataya. I mean, it depends how deep you went in the race. I think he spread pretty deeply in the first three legs, and not surprising we used that horse. Yeah, now Amortization was the favorite. Amortization, she got going a little bit late in there. I tried the Caroline Thomas. She ran a little at the end, but the winner was good. Yeah, I agree. It's funny, Graham's horses ran so well after the break, and he's been a little quiet since then, but this horse looked okay. I agree. Yeah. See if you can find a way to get the Breeders' Cup with that horse.
I'm sure Earl Mack certainly won't. He won't say no if Graham suggests it.
Well, they got to get into one of the stakes. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah.
To get, have to rush into the stake at Keeneland and you know, in a matter of 3 weeks, and then go to the Breeders' Cup from there. I imagine they'd like to try, but it's, you know, when you break your maiden on the 19th, there's not a lot of room. I'm sure they'd be game, but we'll see if they do that and if they're able to. See if it's good enough to do it.
Now, there's been a steady supply of maiden races, and you know, there's a backlog actually of the 2-year-olds, so we'll see, you know, quite a few more yet, and looking already at the Thursday and Friday cards, looking ahead. I thought the first 3 days of racing was good, and
I agree. Very competitive, very tough races. I think the Thursday and Friday cards are competitive. I just put my picks up for Thursday and done a bunch of work on Friday, but there's a lot of races I have open without picks. I agree. I think they're very, very tough. I'm finding them tough to make picks even, and finding tough for those picks to be particularly successful. It's been hard.
Well, plus, and you guys, what's the schedule now? You've got the broadcasts.
I'm eager to get in there tomorrow to do my part of the Churchill Delaware show from 12:30 to 5 tomorrow. And then we'll be on for the rest of the... I mean, listen, we're going to be on through November. And we'll be covering Belmont and Aqueduct and Churchill when they're racing. And Churchill's done after this week, but they'll be back in November as well. So we've got a lot more coverage coming up, you know, over 2 more months of coverage.
Well, we're starting to we'll look tomorrow toward the Saturday card, and we've got challenge races now that are going to start to fill up. And speaking of which, Andy, we should probably visit the unfortunate fracture and retirement of Volatile. You know, he
you wrote a condylar on your board. I thought it was a hairline, Steve.
The hairline? No, it's a hairline fracture of the condylar.
Okay. I would think that more horses would enter the box
of the cannon.
We'd like to think that more people would be ready to take a shot in that race since he's not going to run. I'm sorry. Obviously, you hate to see good horses, you know, get injured and retired or whatever. Because I was, you know, very much on the fence with him. And obviously, was a very talented horse, but I was eager to see what he would do in a bigger, more competitive, perhaps some speed laden field in the Breeders' Cup. And I'm sorry we won't get a chance to see that. But I think the jury's really still out. Obviously, he's had a lot of talent, but he didn't meet. Got into an uncompetitive situation in the Vanderbilt, and I was sort of looking forward to seeing what happens over the Breeders' Cup. And sorry, he won't run. From the race perspective, perhaps the race will be more competitive without him in there. I don't know if there are any real speed horses pointing the race, even with him in there. Obviously, he would have been the horse to beat. I wonder if this will encourage Steve Asmussen to be more aggressive with his name, Yaupin. I mean, I guess he would run, you know, maybe he's thinking of running him to Phoenix or something at Keeneland as a prep. But, I mean, maybe he's more aggressive.
You would think that some people would swing into action. I mean, if those that were thinking of avoiding it, and I'm going to pull up here. I've got it right here. Here's the nominations to see who might jump into the lurch.
I think they're the invitees. Isn't it invitational? You know what that means? You can ask anybody that wants to run to run.
Exactly.
Like a birthday party where they keep asking all the kids if they get enough kids to show up.
Well, we know Vacoma's not coming. T loves a fight. Stan the man.
Let me ask you about Vacoma. Is he done for the year?
Not supposed to be.
Oh, okay, I'm just wondering if there's been an announcement on him. I mean, it's too bad. He seems to have such soundness issues. He's such a nice horse. I feel bad for them.
I'll check with Randy Hill.
He's had a history of pointing for this race, that race, and the other race, and not running any of them, right?
A little bit.
We saw that all last year.
I'm just sending him a quick note. But Nicodemus, I don't know if he's... if the Friedbergs are listening, let us know if Nicodemus is up to running or if he's sidelined.
I love Nicodemus.
Mind Control nominated, Lexitonian, who is potentially...
What about Complexity? Is he nominated?
Complexity is not nominated, but Honest Mischief is.
Honest Mischief is not winning that race unless it comes up very, very weak. So he did run okay last time.
Admiral Lynch, Arch Cat, Basin, Bon Raison, Firenze Fire, Funny Guy, King Jack, Cristo Sky, Lackey for Damon Dillodobico. It's kind of a catch-all. I don't know. This does not look promising for a big group.
Maybe some people will be more inclined to want to run.
Yeah.
With the big horse out. We'll see. I imagine he'll pick up a horse or two. I'd like to think so.
You would hope. I mean, you would think that getting him out of there opens things up. Whitmore's probably running the Phoenix.
Yeah, I would assume. I would assume he is. We done?
No. No, not yet. We started a couple minutes late, and I'm seeing if we can't get an answer from Randy Hill on Vacoma's status. I am sending you something that just came in from Esquire, which I know you're going to enjoy. Which is it time to acknowledge Miller's Crossing as the best Coen Brothers film?
I don't know. It's my favorite. I like a lot of them though. I think Blood Simple's great.
But Simple is great.
What's that line? What's that great line in The Horse Crossing from Marcia Gay Harden? She says to Gabriel Byrne in the room. She's that great line to him. My friend John will remember it. I don't know. Great movie. I should watch it again.
Yeah, I watch it whenever it's on, and Tina walks into the room and gets annoyed.
the greatest movies ever.
I don't get it. I don't understand, you know, what about it she is, what turns her off, because it's just fabulous, start to finish. It's got everything.
They made a lot of great movies.
Yes, they have. And all different. The best part is it's all, you know, they're
right.
All different styles and touching on all different genres. And in a lot of ways, it's sort of a parallel career of Altman, right? Altman wanted to, you know, do all these different genres as well.
Yeah, I love Altman.
Yeah.
Cave and Mrs. Miller.
You've been steadfast.
Nashville, Miller, California Split, MASH. Long Goodbye.
Long Goodbye.
Yeah, Long Goodbye is the greatest. Anyway, this is what we're reduced to talking about.
We love talking about movies. Since when don't we talk about? Oh, and by the way, folks, for those listening that are friends of Andy out there, I'm trying to encourage him. You're going to be shocked. He's never seen Karate Kid, and we've been watching.
It's a well-known discussion because Anthony and I discuss it on Talking Horses all the time. So
there you go.
You would know that this is.
I can't watch Talking Horses. I can't watch it. I'm typically on the air when they're in the prime.
No, it's over at 12:30 every day. I don't care that you don't watch it, but don't give me this crap that you can't watch it.
Well, he should be encouraged. We've been watching, with Tina and I started watching Cobra Kai, which
is
fabulous.
I'll watch the Karate Kid as soon as you start watching Talking Horses.
All right. You know what? Now you're in trouble, because I'll make a special effort and I'll start citing individual moments.
Sure.
I will.
Sure.
What? How about, you got anything for Thursday or Friday?
No. I'm not giving out picks in the show.
You always give out. You've been giving them out for years. What are you talking about?
I mean, Friday, I'm barely in. I don't like to get picks. They never win.
How about?
There are a lot of competitive races. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, they're good. It's good.
In the sixth race, Tangerine Dream was against the track last time.
All right, there we go.
Of course, he ran second. Came back and ran very well on Sunday. Had the return of Cristal in the ninth. Logic and Reason would be tough in that race. Well, that's about it. Competitive races. My picks are on the website. People can look them up.
But we'd like to hear the people.
Have you handicapped any races for Thursday, Steve? Do you have anything?
I don't yet. I've got them printed out, and I'll start looking probably tonight.
Okay. Who's your next guest?
I'm unsure, actually. Don't know. I don't know. I didn't plan ahead. I was supposed to be at the eye doctor. I've got to go. I got a problem. So.
Oh, yeah. What's wrong?
Something's amiss. Started to bother me over the weekend, and there's something floating around that is darting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I rather than do what I did last year when I ignored it for 2 weeks and was lucky to retain sight, I've called right away and left them a message, and they called me and at first they thought they could get me in at 10, so I was a little dubious about the show, and I told Casey I think I may have to, you know, run to Albany. And but then they came back and they said that they could see me at 1 o'clock. So I was able to go ahead and put
a
show.
Did you see that Tis the Law is officially skipping the Preakness?
I have not seen that. That's news this morning.
Dave Brennan tweeted it 20 minutes ago.
Very nice. So maybe, you know what? We'll have Dave Grenick maybe to visit. To
I think you should call him right now.
We will. We will. That I wonder if this officially means, too, that Kenny McPeak swings into action.
Well, I'm sure he's officially swinging into action. And the question is, what's his action?
Andy Serling, everybody, back with you guys, the America's Day at the Races, bringing you action.
Big 5 days this week.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Good news is it's warming up. Though the wind's still howling outside my window. I'm going to go. See you later.
We'll look forward to watching Talking Horses with Andy on Thursday, but the America's Day at the Races is back now at Belmont, and tomorrow they'll bring you Churchill and Delaware. How about that? We'll take a break, and we'll see. We'll get some details from Dave Grenig about Tis the Law decision. Back after this to close out Tuesday. We're lucky to even... Didn't think there was going to be a show at 8:45. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Looking at what this means, we brought it up earlier this morning regarding Tis the Law bypassing, and just looking at what I've got and the news, of course, also from yesterday that Marty had with the Jesus's team. Going ahead and committing, and now Dave Grenig able to join us. Dave, good morning. Andy Serling just off the line, and Andy mentioned that you broke the Tis the Law, no Preakness news.
Hey, Steve, yes. I mean, I think pretty much it was widely speculated that this was their plan of action, but, you know, Barkley decided today to make it official, and they're just going to skip the Preakness and point for the Breeders' Cup Classic. It's really the, probably the right decision as far as I'm concerned. From an outsider's view, they can get all the rewards if they win the Classic, in my opinion.
And they may not even need to win the Classic, I suppose. I mean, let's see what happens if Authentic. I suppose that ledger balances out quite a bit if Authentic were to win the Preakness, and then the Breeders' Cup, you know, becomes a tiebreaker in essence. I would think that even after Derby, Tis the Law remains, you know, the slight favorite as a 3-year-old champ. No.
I agree. He's got the Florida Derby, the Travers, the Belmont. It's a heavy resume.
Yeah,
and you know it's not like this horse didn't run 12th in the Derby. He ran second. Yeah. I mean, he ran a solid race on a track that he's now proven twice that he's
doesn't run as well. I hate to say he doesn't like it. He doesn't run as well at Churchill as he's run everywhere else. And, you know, but the two losses are like by a combined two lengths, so, or 2 1/4 lengths. So he's not running poorly. He just didn't win. And, you know, Authentic would probably have to win the Preakness, and or if he doesn't, and say Art Collector wins the Preakness, and then maybe it's a showdown in the Classic if all three get there. I'm not sure how people would vote it, but as far as accomplishments and resume, I mean, right now Tidlaw, you know, he's got 3 grade ones, and nobody else does.
Well, and I did see, I'm just pulling up your piece, that you have a complete story. It's not just a DRF live blurb. It has quotes from Barkley Tag, and the one encouraging part of this decision is where he told you today was the first really good day that we felt comfortable about him. Because, Dave, I mean, the things that they were telling you last week and over the last, I don't know, fortnight, really, were a little alarming, that he had, you know, that he had come back a little sluggish post Derby.
Yeah, I mean, he just watching him train, you know, having watched him train at Saratoga and Belmont, and then watching him train since he got back, and now Mike Welsh saw him several days, and I've seen him several days.
Yep.
Both of us have agreed that, you know, and you know, they confirm, Robin and Barkley confirmed that he wasn't doing that great coming out of the race. So, and I was there this morning, and I did see him gallop. And to me, you know, I didn't see every inch of his move, but from what I did see, it looked to me like he was better flowing, better fluid movement today, I'd say. And, you know, the one thing that I've noticed is when he'd been going into the clubhouse turn, that it looked like he was getting out a little bit. And today, he wasn't. And he had, you know, just there was a little more energy. Now, part of that might be the cooler weather as well, because I thought he had a good day. I'd say today's Tuesday, it's last Friday or so, the first cool morning. And he, you know, he just seemed to wake him up a little bit. And I think, look, when we talked about him prior to the Kentucky Derby, one of the things we said was that he had not run back on 4 weeks before. And, you know, I don't know if that had a role in it or not, but now he doesn't have to worry about that. He can get the timing that he's been successful with to go from Kentucky to the Breeders' Cup, and we were sort of hashing out his schedule for next year. And when we came out with the schedule for next year, all the races that you'd want to make were pretty much well spaced out. So, and the good news too for fans of his and those who may not be fans of his, he's supposed to run next year at 4, which is great. So, you know, this will only help that, I think. So, you know, it just makes the most sense. Proper timing, he'll give you his best shot. Whether that's good enough to beat older horses or other 3-year-olds, we'll find out on November 7th. That's why they run the races.
Well, there you go. That coupled with some of the news that Marty was on top of yesterday in terms of horses supplementing. We have two supplements, George Abreu with Live Your Beast Life and Jesus' Team now pitching in and waiting for Todd Pletcher, who seems particularly, I guess it doesn't matter when Preaknesses are run, Todd Pletcher is is recalcitrant to go to Baltimore.
Yeah, whether it's 2 weeks after the Derby or 4 weeks, it's not maybe his, you know, most ambitious spot here. Look, I don't think, just from, again, from an outsider's view, I'm not sure that you'd be excited to run Dr. Post in a big race like that off of his last race. It wasn't very good in the Jim Dandy. So let's just, you know, take him out for a second. Happy Saver, you would think that given the fact that he's undefeated and that he has an entry paid by winning the Tessio, of which he was just okay. I thought he might have won that race a little bit more emphatically, just given what he was running against. But, you know, maybe now that Tis the Law is officially out of the Preakness, that maybe they revisit it, you know, with a more positive attitude. Another thing to keep in mind, though, with some of this action here on the 3rd, is the jockeys are all over the place. You've got a big day, obviously, in Baltimore, a big day in New York, a big day at Keeneland, and the leading jockey in the country isn't available to ride anywhere because he's serving the final day of a suspension. That's Irad Ortiz Jr. So jockeys are at a premium. You've got protocols to deal with in terms of where you can, you know, everybody, because racing just likes to work this way. Everybody has different protocols and how long you need to be in town to ride at that, you know, if you're coming from out of town. So there's a lot more to juggle this year than in past years. And
good point.
You know, that could play a role in it too. Say if you're Todd, I've actually heard Trevor McCarthy's writing "Live Your Beast Life." I don't know that for a fact. I haven't confirmed it, but that's what I was told. So he wrote "Happy Saver." So if he's not available to write him, then who is? I just don't know who's going to be where on those days. And I still think that's a work in progress, and that could play a role into where they decide to run. Another thing to keep in mind is I think the Jockey Club Gold Cup is going to come up a light field. I think you've got Tacitus and Prioritize and a few others. The pot's not attractive at $250,000, but it's still a name race in stature, and it's a grade one. And if you don't want to run in a dozen horses, again, say a dozen go in the Preakness, and maybe you want to run in what's going to be a 5 or 6 horse field in Jockey Club at a mile and a quarter.
Well, and similarly, yesterday, no sooner had you written about the prospective Vosburgh field, hours later, there was a new story to write about the Vosburgh field. That was crazy. Talk about the volatile news from yesterday and what you think it means for Saturday. They'll take.
I was a little suspicious that he wasn't going to run when he didn't work on Monday. And, you know, Steve Asmussen's like clockwork. They blow out they do a half mile and 50 when they run Saturday on Monday. I was sort of given a little diversion from the connections. And then later in the day, the owners put out something that said that, you know, now I know why he didn't work on Monday. So he's retired. Good thing it's not a handicap, because the weights come out on, say, Sunday, and nobody else can come in. Now you might see some horses supplement to the race. Who those horses might be, I'm not sure. But as far as those who are nominated that might show up, you might get a Stan the Man, who won the Tail of the Cat for John Terranova, or Funny Guy, who was fourth in the forego. I think they're debating maybe going to the Kelso with him. But I think guys who are thinking about running in the DeFrancis as a way to avoid volatile can now look at the Vosburgh, especially with its status as a winning year in for the Breeders' Cup Sprint. So it'll be interesting to see how many people might supplement or might just change course, which we'll know tomorrow when they take entries. But it does open that race up significantly.
Is anybody, Andy and I were just speculating on it, aside from the nominations, obviously Andrew Burns would take... would invite anybody that would show an interest at this point. Was there any training track chatter this morning about somebody throwing in?
There wasn't, but I mean, I don't know if, you know, Asmussen has a pretty deep bench of sprinters. Would he come in with a Yalpon? I don't know that. But usually, to me, Steve nominates these horses. He's not, he's not big a supplement. So I don't know. Plus, he's a 3-year-old. He could show up in the Phoenix. He could show up maybe. I think Baltimore has one. Was it the Chick Lang for 3-year-olds? I mean, if they want to sort of keep his record unblemished, I mean, how good would he look in a race like that? Now, I don't know if it necessarily does anything for him. So I'm not sure as far as who's out there, to supplement. I really don't know the perspective, Phoenix field, is that field coming up particularly strong? I don't know. Would somebody come out of, maybe divert from there to come here? So, plus again, shipping in these days is not an easy thing to do, as we talked about. It's not simple to just say, hey, I'm going to come this way. But I think, the horses that I mentioned that were looking at coming are Share the Ride, he told me he was 80% sure to run. He's going to run now. He Loved the Fight. No, he'll run. So you'll pick up a few, but I'm not exactly sure who. Again, it's not easy to just pick up from on a Tuesday or Wednesday and ship into New York without having made a prior arrangement.
Do we know what's the status of Nicodemus?
Nicodemus is here. He could do it. I always viewed him more as a miler type. I thought he was more looking at the Kelso.
Okay.
I could see Linda putting him in that spot.
So funny. So in essence, Firenze Fire becomes a pretty clear favorite out of this.
Yes. Again, depending on what pending a surprise like a Yalpon, someone like that, I would say that yes, you're right. Firenze Fire is going to have to bounce back from a a pretty dismal race. Now, I don't know. I think he just ran, right? Mind Control, didn't he just run?
Yeah, he ran. He ran the other day, last week or the week before
Like the Mr. Prospector, maybe, or something. Like,
I don't know.
Some other spot.
Yes.
Or Salvatore. Was, again, you know, you had some races that just happened. I don't know if these guys would wheel back, in a spot like that.
Yeah, I think the Mr. Prospector was probably the spot, and he didn't run great either. He was third or off the board in the Mr. Prospector. Dave, a couple of notes. I did see with interest, and I didn't expect to talk about it, but I did see the fun apprentice note that Angel taking the book of Charlie Marquez, 17-year-old, who was Carlos Marquez's son and the grandson of Carlos Marquez Sr., who Angel rode with.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, too, primarily for the fact that, and I guess the protocols, as I've said to you probably many times, Steve, there are really no rules in horse racing. They're just suggestions. and the rules that was put out at the beginning of the meet that no out-of-town riders would be permitted at Belmont seems to have, gone by the wayside. Because this was an out-of-town rider who, I guess, has to get a COVID test on Monday and a COVID test Friday so that he can ride here. But I guess it's interesting that, the Angel's going to take his books, the 17-year-old kid, but I was a little caught off guard because I just didn't think you were allowed to come in from out of town. So now the rules are a little bit different, but he racked up some nice numbers at Laurel. He was third in the spring and third in the summer fall meet, or the summer meet, I should say. We only have like two other apprentices here, Cardenas and Harkey. And this one has a little bit even more experience than those two guys, I guess, because he's a 5-pound and had a little more success. And, yeah, Angel took his book, I think at the request of his grandfather, Carlos Marquez Sr., who he rode with, Angel did, back in the 70s and 80s. So it'll be interesting to see how he performs here. And, look, we need jockeys. Saturday, I think we had 13 jockeys in the room, and one of those jockeys had one mount, and another jockey had two mounts. So because of suspensions and guys being out of town, well, mostly suspensions, we were short on riders. So it's good to have some jockeys back in town, and it'll be interesting to see this guy could develop. Probably takes his lumps at Belmont, but once we get going at Aqueduct, I'm sure he'll do quite well.
Well, and he's got 63 career wins, this Charlie Marquez.
Yeah. Yeah, 63, most of them at Laurel. I think he's ridden a few at Penn National and maybe Delaware. And from all accounts, he's pretty talented for, he's only 17. It's Cardenas had a good winter, I thought, and he was pretty inexperienced in terms of mounts, but he had been an exercise rider for a while, so he had more foundation than even this youngster does. So hopefully, I'm sure Angel will be going over tapes with him. And coming to Belmont at this time, and Jockey Colony's, got some talent in there, and if they were willing to work with him, the Ortiz brothers, Franco, or the older guys, and Johnny and Castellano, give him a little pointer, some tips, and work with him. That can only benefit. Only benefit him.
Well, with the Ortizes, not tallying anything these first 3 days at Belmont. Big chance. Luis Saez off to a roaring start, and that was with no wins on Friday. But Manny as well with a hat full, and pretty much everybody getting into Dylan Davis with a 3-win day on Sunday.
Right. Now, I think Saez is probably going to, he's going to miss some time because I think he's going to go to California.
Yes, to
ride Maximum Security.
Yep.
And again, I don't know California's rules in terms of how long he has to be out there before he, does he have to be there? Can he just show up, take a test, and ride? I'm not well versed in all the different rules that all the different states have for a lot. But when he comes back to New York, let's say he rides up Saturday, he's probably got to miss a few days. So as far as contending for a meet title, he's going to have to make the most of his opportunities. And again, some guys are going to have to go out of town for October 3rd. Johnny obviously is going to have to leave. I believe Pimlico is 72 hours out. Like, if you're going to ride there on Thursday of Preakness Week, you have to be down there Monday. and then Tuesday for Friday, Wednesday for Saturday is what I believe I saw as the protocols there. So it's going to be interesting to see who sticks around. I believe Jose Ortiz is talking to Jimmy Riccio Jr., his agent, yesterday. It sounds like he's staying in New York, so whatever, and like, I guess if Mystic Guide runs in the Preakness, he's going to need a jock. You know, so some of these guys just decided, look, I'm just going to, and I would imagine IRAD would probably just stay in New York too, you know, just to be here, I guess. When he gets, he'll be eligible to ride October 4th.
Dave Groening, everybody, with the breaking news today. Tis the law, bypassing Preakness as fairly expected, and looking ahead to the Vosburgh and the Noble Damsel on Saturday. We got some of the New York bred stuff the following week. We've got Belmont Derby coming and the Pilgrim, the Joe Hirsch.
The Joe Hirsch. Don't forget the Joe Hirsch.
Joe Hirsch. Wouldn't hurt a baby.
Wouldn't hurt a baby. Love Joe Hirsch.
And what else? We got the Beldame yet, and we got plenty to look forward to, and lots of visits with Dave Groening. The question everybody's waiting for me to ask: how was Beth's brisket?
Oh, it was awesome! Her brisket's awesome. I didn't get the chance to show her your recipe, but maybe I'll have her make that for Hanukkah.
All right, so fair enough. Or no, make the kugel for break the fast.
There you go.
Dave Groening, everybody, DRF Groening with On the Spot reporting. Like you like. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Steve. Talk to you.
Dave Groening, everybody. Nice capper to a show that almost didn't happen. Mark Cassie with his extensive visit this morning, and Nicole Russo as well. Appreciated her outstanding coverage of the sale action. And we had breaking news, $500,000 Caracanti seller as well, Andy Serling and Dave Groening in this last hour. Good luck today if you're going to play, and you've got plenty of options. Tuesday, back to Indiana. Get after that pick five. All right. And what else today? Let's see. What else we got? Belterra, Finger Lakes, Fort Erie, Grants Pass, Louisiana Downs, Mountaineer Parks, Presque Isle, and Thistle Down. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.